in brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust and blues you can trust. Indigos feel and white ones heal. Yellow scare and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Marge face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bolkeman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast,
episode 558.
That's right. What are we talking about tonight?
What is this, Green Lantern 11?
Yeah.
It's all a blur. You and I will talk after the fact. This hasn't been a good weekend anyway, but so maybe in a way it might actually mellow my feelings on this issue. I doubt it, but it distracted me enough where maybe I'll be more even keeled about this. So yes, we're going to do Green Lantern 11. I think we can probably do this relatively efficiently, I hope. So the title, of course, the cover is what the Empire of Blood, which with everyone's favorite Lord Premier Tharos, which nobody gives a rat's ass about on the cover. So that's always comforting. But the in story title is Vegas, Baby Vegas. So Jeremy Adams, Zermanico, and Amanse, was it Nanyopan? Did the art. I'm trying to zoom this in, and every time I zoom in, it moves out. That's why Fajardo Jr., colorist, Dave Sharp, letterer, Zermanico did the cover, variant cover artist, Doc Shaner, Ian Churchill, Dave Johnson, Julian Grant, editor, and he's maybe infamous soon, Paul Kibitsky, editor. So where the issue begins on Zamaron, where they're being shaken down by Lord Premier Tharos to basically join his new world order, if you will, of in the galaxy. And they'd say, we don't need that. Thank you very much.
Your new empire.
Yeah. That's right. Chancellor Palpatine is evil. trust me, I'll take 1,000 Palpatines over this Tharos MF-er. Whether it's Queen Agapo or whoever the queen is at the moment, because we don't really know. She says, no, well, love is all we need. And obviously love isn't all they need, because the United Planets do what they do best these days, and they blow up the Zamaron central power battery, so they're powerless. So that's comforting. We'll talk about that. Then we cut to Earth, where Carol is really depressed. Who the hell knows entirely why? We assume it has to do with Hal, but it's Carol, so who knows? She's with Nate, her fiance, and all of a sudden she just gets all motivated. So let's run off and get married. So they end up going to Vegas, as we find out later in the issue. But you know, her. Your thoughts dwell on your mother. Her thoughts dwell on Hal. We'll continue the Star Wars theme throughout the entire episode, because the issue for me means nothing. Now we cut back to Oa with the Resistance base, and Hal is still being, I think, ridiculously naive here. But at least Razor throws him a life preserver, because he talks about, hey, you know, the Council of the United Planets is basically this really hard fought, put together coalition that's held together by a thread. So considering all the animosity and the council, when they find out that what Tharos is up to, that'll splinter the council and we'll be okay. And it's like, but we need proof. And of course, this bird lantern is now supposedly all pissed at Tharos for using him up and spitting him out. And it's like, how appropriate as a bird? I'll sing like a canary if you take me there. And it's like, okay. Meanwhile, you have Kyle, who is a complete mess. And we'll talk about this later on. Kyle's left behind along with Salak and 2-6, where Joe and company, Hal, Simon, Razor, right? Razor goes to? I don't even remember anymore. It doesn't matter. And the Bird Lantern, they all go to talk to the United Planets Council. We have this flashback to Hal and Carol, which is really weird, that Carol was waiting for Hal to basically go home with her or walk home with her. And of course, Hal's in trouble for talking back to a teacher. And the principal is kind of like, with all these things I'm asking, I'm like 90% sure about it. But I feel because there's a chance I kind of glossed over stuff because I was numb reading this. he basically tells, you know, Hal, you're not a dumb kid and stuff like that. You're not a bad kid. You have a lot of things going on. We understand, but you got to pull it together. You have to make basically a choice in your life, what you want to be, what kind of life you want. And of course, Hal takes that really good advice and responds by stealing his keys and stealing his car. And he goes, picks up Carol, and she just readily jumps in and they go to Vegas. Yeah, we'll talk about that. So the United Planets, they go to the council and they plead their case, and the Bird Lantern sings like the canary that he is. And the council seemingly is all upset. What is the, you know, it's like, is this true? And Theros is like, of course it's true. It's like, I'm surprised it took you guys this long to come here and do all this. But of course, none of it matters because, again, everybody's dumb as a stump and nobody can figure out that because Theros is a Durlan, that maybe he replaced the entire council with Durlans, which of course he did. So basically, these are all puppets because these are all, they're all Durlans pretending to be the leaders on the council who originally were there. We flash back to Carol's reminiscing about Hal and her in Vegas, and they're playing slot machines. Not quite sure how they probably would be able to do that. But then again, I could be wrong about that. But then the cops show up and Hal ends up getting brought back, and we get seemingly, I guess, implying this is the first instance of Hal being taken away from Carol or leaving and saying, like, I'll be back, and Carol reacting the way she did. Carol and Nate and some Chapel of Solitude, for some strange reason, which is kind of funny, though, decide to get married. They're just about to finish their vows when a Star Sapphire ring shows up for Carol, and she just says Hal at the end, and that ends the main story. And Chad's going to give the even briefer recap of the Guy Gardner story.
House of Brainiac, part two. This is what the guy, what do we say? It is called Guy's Bogus Lobo Adventure. So this is part two. He has Lobo, quote unquote. We know it's not a Lobo, a Cesarnian. He has a Cesarnian in custody. Last we saw, the Space Dolphins were coming after him. They are hiding to get away from them. Guy threatens him, you better not whistle. So he says, Guy takes him into the bars. Hey, you have an interspace transmitter. You know, my ring can't do that. I need to send I need to send a message out that I'm going to call Obo, or sorry, call Oa, say basically I got my bounty, I'm heading out. And he doesn't know how to work the interspace transmitter, so the Cesarnian does it for him. And turns out, as they're having a drink, he tells him, no, I never called Oa. I called the bounty hunter depot nearby, basically, to let them know where we were. So they all come busting in, these bounty hunters, one of whom is Bolfunga, the Unrelenting.
The highlight of the entire issue, I'm going to point out for me. That's the only highlight in this issue, again.
two other bounty hunters as well. One of them who looks like a weaponer of some kind, or maybe might be part Thanagarian. I'm not sure. Just based on helmet design and everything. But they are not the brightest bulbs in the drawer. So they're arguing with each other and fighting over each other. And Guy's like, well, that really backfired on you, didn't it? And suddenly there's, right before the fight goes down, there's a big light, escaped prisoner found, recontainment initiated. Then they're both beamed up, and their guy stands with this Cesarnian among others. And we can kind of figure out where they are because, one, this is House of Brainiac, and two, the title for the next issue, next part of the story, is called Bottled Up. So we're assuming Guy is in a bottle with a bunch of other Cesarnians, and this is Brainiac's doing. And that's the end of that. And that's Jeremy Adams, writer, artist Kevin McGuire, colorist Rosemary Cheatham, letter Dave Sharp, assistant editor Jillian Grant, and editor Paul Kaminsky.
Well, I suppose we probably should talk about the Guy stuff first, since it'll take like probably 40 seconds. All kidding aside, I actually didn't, probably because I was shaking my head so much in the first story that the backup story actually didn't seem that bad to me. Now, I don't care about it. I'm not invested at all. And I'm not going to tell you. And other than the curse base, everything you said as far as the wrap up, that's basically my understanding of what happened in this issue, too. And nor do I care to dive any deeper if we have to. But for what it was, you know, at least Guy, I thought, was amusing. And the banter between the Zarni and then and Guy was kind of funny at times. So still, I mean, you can make a case. There's some glaring logic, you know, from a logic perspective on why people do what they do there's a lot of questionable things or decisions, not as bad as in the main story, but still, it is, it's okay. I mean, I still don't think this story is going to pay off in any meaningful way as far as I'm concerned, but it's Guy, so I'm kind of happy seeing Guy at this point based on what we're getting. Here it is.
Although I would say, it makes sense he's having a drink while he's waiting. He doesn't do anything out of character here except not know how to use an interspace transmitter.
And trusting that guy to do it.
Yeah, so like that's my only thing is, like, I could see Guy, enough of a I don't give a fuck kind of an attitude that it's not totally out of character, but it's enough. Like, Guy spent a significant amount of time in space as a lawman, basically. He should definitely know how to work an interspace transmitter, despite being a big dumb human or whatever people want to say about humans out in space. But he should definitely know. And then, like you said, trusting a Cesarnian to do trusting his bounty to do it.
Yeah, that's so stupid. So. I mean, and that's really what I meant, by the way. I wasn't implying that. I mean, and I contrasted it with the main story because there's so many illogical things that happen in that story it bothers me just because now we're starting to see arguably a trend in how Jeremy's writing one and Jeremy's writing the other. But to me, yes, that Zarn. Yeah, let's trust the guy, your bounty to do what you want to do and not be self-serving in the process or potentially screw you because, yeah, that makes no damn sense other than from a comedic relief perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a backup. It's hyper-condensed storytelling, so I'm not going to, give it its lumps. It's built to be very quick. What, there's only three or four parts of it, I think, is all they're doing for this, and what, it's only a couple of pages each issue, so I don't mind them not taking the time to draw it out and explain it. We just got to get from point A to point B. How do we get them in the bottle? This is how we're going to do it, whatever. And it is kind of clever to have the Cesarnian call, for a distraction that doesn't really pan out. That's just funny. So,
yeah, I mean, it is funny. It kind of is the chickens coming home to roost, but yeah, the surprise cameo by Bullfunga is kind of the one thing that made me really smile in this whole issue.
All right, main story. First of all, not a fan of the cover. I'm not a fan of really any of the covers for issue 11. There's one that I think is okay, and it's Hal, and it's I included it in our album art for this episode if anybody wants to check it out. It's Hal kind of zipping through some canyons, but he is so overly muscular in that image that even that is not like it's look, none of the covers are bad in terms of stylistic, in terms of technical ability in terms of getting things done. I just don't like, first of all, I don't care about Tharos, but also I'm just not a really big fan of all this red and all this whatever that we're seeing on the cover. It's also maybe this more watercolor design or something. I'm not sure how I feel about it. And then just the poses and coloring on some of the other ones, I don't care too much. And like I said, the one I do like is even then I have a nitpick because it's a little too muscular. So it's not like they all suck and this one happens to suck the least. I think they're just all kind of middling and one's kind of okay. So not too big of a fan of any of the covers.
No, I'm not either. But the art, for the most part, the artwork is not my problem with this issue.
No, in interiors wise, I think the interiors really stand out.
Yeah,
the kids look a little weird in a couple of spots, but I think that's just you're trying to draw kids. So you do the big toothy smiles and the, big bright eyes and like that whole thing. So that's not anything that I'm too upset about. But I think there's lots of cool stuff in here in terms of the art because the Zamorons kind of floating around the crystals, the explosion, everybody fighting in the background, Carol in her house with the bookshelf and the background details and all of that stuff. That was pretty great. Them driving down the highway. There's other cars on the road. There's signage. There's telephone poles. There's backgrounds. The neighborhood with the kids in the flashback. You see other houses, the trees, the city blocks, all that stuff. And there's just lots of background detail and stuff like that in there. Not a lot of blank panels. Lots of cool designs and action. I think artistically speaking, interior wise, I think it's this one's a pretty damn good example. I think.
I'm the issue with that and I have in all of this is nothing is really is 99% the writing in it and where we're going with this. But I will point out, since you zeroed in on the art first, the one thing I don't like, which is because it's, and I don't blame Zermanico directly because it's a trope. It's a trope we see artists do a lot. It's a trope we see in TV shows and movies, how they cast. I don't like the trope of, oh, we're drawing a young character, so let's make them all freckle face. Here's a newsflash. If you have freckles all over your face when you're 9, you're probably going to have freckles all over your face when you're 20, and they're probably going to be more noticeable because the sun's going to bring them out. I don't like that. I hate that in movies when they cast this freckle-faced girl to play this girl who we know grows up to be completely smooth-skinned. That, you, we're talking 99% chance that ain't happening in real life. So I just don't – again, like, it's kind of a trope, and it's trying to just – I don't know. It's kind of weird in a way seeing Carol – some of the expressions on Carol's face. But again, I'm more concerned with the way Carol acts in this issue, even though that's kind of an example of how she's acting. It's a physical demonstration of how she's she's thinking and how she's behaving. But overall, yes, the artwork is a highlight of this. But so I'm not sure how you want to approach this. You want to say what you like about this issue before I tell you why you're wrong? Do you want to? To be fair, there's a chance you may say there are two things, because I'm not going to go into specifics yet because I'm giving you your chance, but there's like a couple of things that kind of almost work, but then they don't. And I find that more annoying. So I was going to say, I could possibly agree with something you throw out that I don't dislike.
I think in terms of plot progression, in terms of whatever Tharos is in, we don't know is in game, but we do know it involves blowing up batteries, and we haven't seen Zamaron yet. So we had to get here at some point. Do I like how quickly it all went down, especially for somebody as experienced as Zamaron's? No, but, you know, we only see the start of the fight after the ring blows up. So, you know, I kind of equate Zamaron's to Amazons in some way, in terms of fighting ability and stuff like that. In a lot of ways, they are similar. Should they have been able to take down the battery that quickly? That's, you know, we've actually had that argument already on the other batteries that have been exploded. So this is nothing new here. And I can't really say they took down the Zamarons too easily, because technically we don't see them take down the Zamarons.
We know the rings are powerless.
Yes.
So you can assume. We know what's going to happen.
Yeah. But they are skilled warriors. If they, you know, it'd be like, you know, somebody, you know, getting a surprise punch on Wonder Woman. You know what I mean? Like, come on. She's a better fighter than that. Now, as far as the whole Carol stuff, I don't understand. Like, she's obviously very confused. And some people like to just when they are so distraught or uncertain about things, they just disconnect from reality and try to, since they feel so little grip on what the things going on in their own life, they feel they have to grip onto something and push it through. So I guess I could kind of see the whole marriage thing, but it doesn't ring too true for me. But I only say that in terms of potentially maybe seeing where somebody's coming from and trying to get her to go down this direction. I do like the flashback. One thing that Jeremy has said, and did he say it on our show, or did he say it on somebody? So he was talking about how Hal and Carol have a very unique relationship in that they're the only ones who grew up together. Like, Lois and Clark didn't grow up together. Barry and Iris, well, I mean, they changed that retroactively for the Flash show and stuff like that. But typically speaking, they're the only ones who actually have history as children and stuff together. So he wants to explore that unique side of their relationship, which actually makes sense to me because, like, as I said in our interview with him, is like, look, nobody's made me give a shit about Hal and Carol ever. But okay, you just told me you have the quote unquote unique take. Okay, they were kids together, so. Okay, you're right. We haven't explored that much. Let's see it. We saw it here. Like I said, artistically, I didn't have too much of a problem with it. Hal being
a dick.
There's a little too much here with the stealing the car and stuff, but we also have to remember he just lost his father relatively. So I don't know how we're dealing with all of that. So him being, I don't know. there's some wiggle room with how much of a role his father played in his life and him going off the rails a little bit when you include his proclivity for being kind of active on the seat of his pants, kind of just his entire life. Okay. There's, again, it's not 100% rings true, but it's also, hey, I can kind of see what you're doing type of a thing. I do like, in terms of, on when they enter the Great Hall, I do like the kind of bait and switch. Like, yes, they should have accounted for the whole Durlin thing, that, you know, kind of understood it. I do like face turn or heel turn. We'll see which one I'm supposed to land on here in a minute, folks. But it's a very Green Lantern, and it's definitely a very Hal Jordan thing to go knock, knock, motherfuckers, and kick down the door. And I do like that. Okay, we're getting Hal doing this yet again, but it doesn't work this time. So I do like Hal's doing his Hal shit, but it's not working. So I like that. I thought that was funny. Durlin's, I don't know, man. Like, in terms... I'm just thinking socially, like, let's forget the story we're reading. This, like, does anybody trust the Durlin race? Is it just a bunch of shapeshifting fuck ups who have screwed up their reputation for the rest of the cosmos because nobody can trust a Durlin anymore because of shit like this? Do we have like specialty blood tests or something that people have to go through on positions of power to make sure they're not a shapeshifter? what kind of havoc have the Durlins wreaked in terms of the cosmos trusting any member of their race ever? So does Salik and 2-6 get hit?
Yes, they get all okay. Which, to be fair, in my wrap up, I did not mention that. Yes, well, once the reveal of the council occurs, then we get the mustache twirling by Tharos saying, oh, I set this up all along. Yeah. Hal, you know, I let Joe find Hal. And yes, you're to lead us to the resistance. And so Kyle, who's useless right now anyway, which we'll talk about, Kyle, Salik, and 2-6 all get apprehended.
Yeah. Okay. So Kyle, they do say we've taken your fellow terrorists captive. We don't see any blood spurts here, but I imagine these are sort of stun blasts or whatever, so at least we know 2-6 and Salik are alive for the moment. Kyle being a little crazed, it didn't make much sense to me last issue, but I've been thinking about it a little bit. It's like the way the central power batteries work is they take the ambient energy of their respective spectrum color and corresponding emotion and coalesce it within the battery. It all collects there. If you don't have a collection point any longer, and each of the individual collection points are being exploded one by one and are therefore no longer collecting, he says it's splintered the spectrum. There's no focus. That could kind of make sense. Again, I'm only going off of what I know about how central power batteries work and one line of Kyle. Whether that means anything or not, we'll see. But that's where I'm thinking they're headed. We'll see if they go that way. As far as the Chapel of Solitude there, that's interesting because we know for sure that in the DCU, the Church of Ra'al is a recognized religion, isn't it? I'm pretty sure it's a recognized religion. It being called the Solitude, I think, like, why would anybody know about his Fortress of Solitude? But then I remember his identity was revealed a couple of years ago, and didn't his fortress get relocated to the ocean or something at some point in the past couple of years? So I guess I can let all that go. I guess some Superman lore has made it to the general populace. Carol being okay with it, as somebody who's been a superhero and stood in the presence of Superman, it's one thing to be like, I'm going to elope to Vegas. Okay. Out of character a little bit for Carol, for her to stand there in front of Superman's shield and be okay with that, with the Superman act. You've been in the man's presence. You don't feel anything weird about getting married in the Temple of Solitude or whatever. I don't know. That struck me as, it just struck me as weird as somebody who, as somebody who knows Superman. She literally knows Clark. to be doing this just seems so weird. But again, artistically, loved it. There, again, I feel there are a couple things that maybe you feel more strongly. I feel is slightly off. You feel is way off. But I think for me, any of those things that I feel is slightly off is kind of I'm waiting to see where we go the next couple of issues to kind of see how this goes out of flow. Because right now I have a little too many questions about where these feelings are taking me and no resolution yet. So since I'm waiting for resolution, I don't have yet a solid feeling on how I feel about that, if that makes sense. Or maybe I'm just being too charitable, but I did enjoy it. And maybe part of it was just me having rose colored glasses because of how positive I thought the art was, because there have been a couple of issues of recent where Zermonico hasn't put as much work into the backgrounds and stuff like that. So I was pleasantly surprised in this issue. So focused on like, oh, wow, we're really, you know, we're stepping things up here. So
speaking of art, before I start diving into why this is at the moment, and I don't mean this as a real insult, because I think it's not really Jeremy's fault on some level because of all the stops and starts with different things, but it just seems like this book has been going on endlessly. So it's kind of hard for me to remember exactly how I felt in like the first handful of issues, which one would be contending with issue 11 for my least favorite in the series. So it's hard to know. Mm-hmm. All I know is right now, by far, this is my least favorite. But since you're talking about the art, one thing I thought at the time, when I first read the book, was a nice touch when you see the picture of Carol, and we assume Nate, on the table. And the only face you can really make out is Carol. And the other face is pretty much nondescript. It's like that's there's really no subtlety there, but it's perfect. And Myron, I know Myron liked this issue. I kind of was a little taken aback that he seemed to like this issue so much, too. All right. So let's go in order of this. The beginning with the Zamorons, I don't even like the Zamorons really that much. And on the sliding scale, the emotional spectrum and the colors that I'm interested in, you know, the Sapphires don't rank that high for me. But for some reason, probably because where we are in the journey here, that just angered me. This whole what he's doing with the spectrum is just angering me, because we're probably going to get, and mind you, it's probably not going to. There's a chance it'll stick the landing, but I'm not going to give the benefit of the doubt that it will. Maybe I'm just jaded because of War Journal, but maybe we'll get some kind of explanation that won't be thoroughly half-assed about how they're able to do this and how they're able to just completely bitch slap the entire emotional spectrum, which, as we know, has been continually weakened over the last like five, six years. To where starting of going back to not even Lights Out, you can almost understand it from based on what was going on, but Godhead and all that stuff. It's just the spectrum is almost becoming a joke compared to what it was before. But just how easily dismissed and dispatched they were. That angered me right off the bat. Now the stuff with Carol across the board, on one level, including the flashback, which I have a lot of issues with. I should be okay with it, because it kind of, if we go back to the beginning when it was Yumi and Dan doing these reviews, that I was the only one. I mean, you were in the middle, to be fair. Dan was all the way on one side, but I was probably on the other. You were in the middle. But I was the only one who consistently defended Hal and said, yeah, if Hal was doing this kind of behaving this way to somebody new or somebody who he had never met before, he would, it might be creepy. It might be like an a-hole, but you have to understand the nature of the relationship, and there's a history here, and that probably factors into what's going on. And you see this, and you understand, going back to the flashback, that best case scenario, Carol is an enabler. Best case scenario, she's an enabler, if not an active participant in this ups and up and down, back and forth cycle here. I understand people have blind spots and weaknesses, and they can make 99% good decisions in other areas of their life, but when it comes to one thing, they're just horrible, and that's what you have to assume is going on with Carol. That's because of her connection to Hal back since they were kids, that's where all her logic and her intelligence goes out the window. But it still angers me. And I think it's a poor reflection upon her character that she would get in that car and go to Vegas with Hal when there's so many red flags about that. That says nothing. As much as it says a lot of negative things about Hal, I think it says so much more about Carol. But I don't think anybody comes out smelling good in that flashback. Hal just comes out as a jerk.
I mean, they're kids.
Yeah, come on.
You don't make your best decision. They don't even look like they're teenagers.
No, that's my point. It's not like Hal would be 16 and you could say, well, I don't know how he got this car, but I know Hal can. No, she knows he's too young to drive. She knows it's not his car. She knows all these things, even the safety aspect. Yeah, let's go to Vegas. With all due respect, it's stupider for her than it is for him.
I just think it's kids making bad decisions.
I think it's a really, really. Have kids made stupider decisions than this? Yes. But you're kind of like on the far end of the spectrum, no pun intended, of bad decision making. And for her spidey sense not to go off here at all to say, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was. And like I said, it should have resonated because in a way it kind of makes my point about it. Yeah, you see, this is more having to do with Carol and Hal's the nature of their relationship than it has to do with Hal being a dick. But still, I think it really reflects poorly upon Carol. And I think, like you mentioned about getting married, this whole issue, I think, reflects poorly on Carol. But again, some of it has to do with, so maybe there's a codependency with Hal. But either way, I don't get that. So that really bothered me. And I know that was kind of like the framing device of a lot of this issue. So that kind of lost me. I agree. Going to see the council at first, I will openly admit, even though my criticism was, why didn't they think about Dorland's? That was not the first thing in my mind either when they were going to see the council. So I will cut that one a little bit of slack and say, but still, I mean, somebody should have a brain in their head. We're dealing with Dorland's. But OK, if you want to cut that, you want to cut that one out. This issue is like it doubles down on, I mean, maybe triples down on tropes, because you have the two bad tropes, like two bad tastes. It tastes worse together. You have the clairvoyancy trope, which we talked about last time with the puppets of Saros there. Is how it's like there's no way they can't know that Jessica's in on this. It's like clearly because they knew everything that was playing out as we expected. So the heroes are at a disadvantage because the bad guys know everything that's going to happen because they can see because they either set it up or they can see the future. And then you have the whole shape-shifting trope. So you never know who anybody is because seemingly there's no way to test. Like you said, there should be some kind of test like in The Thing with a blood test. So you know who's real and who's not. Where I am with this is exact. Now, this book will never lose me the way War Journal was, because like you and I talked in the last review, we both had some serious reservations about where that book was going by solicits before it even started. And it just surprised us. It was as good as it was. And then kind of eventually kind of ended up probably where we thought it was going to go, but not the reveal. But I mean, our general interest in the book kind of eventually settled into what, oh, yeah, that's not surprising. This is what we think of it. I have too much invested in some of the characters in this book to completely ever check out. But I am in a similar point where I'm on the verge of this book really losing me. Just like I kind of said that same thing before we had the reveal in War Journal, but I'm feeling that way now. You look at the solicits, it doesn't give me a lot of hope that you're going to have a whole lot of interesting things that are going to change my mind happening in the next few issues, especially with the authority thing.
Yeah, Waller.
That crossover is going to be basically pushing this plot back to the back burner too, and which is already going to be over a year at this point. I don't know. The stuff with Kyle, you're right. I get it. That was one of the things that on surface should have resonated with me, because Kyle should be a mess because he has a unique connection to the spectrum. But to me, it also seems like it's real convenient. It's almost like a trope, too, just to make him borderline incoherent and borderline impotent. So he just sits there and he does nothing and barely says anything, because it's kind of hard to imagine Kyle getting out of that anytime soon unless the emotional spectrum somehow gets put in a better place. And I don't see how that happens short term. I don't know. So those are my major concerns with this issue. I just found it very frustrating, very, very frustrating. And I really didn't see anything enjoyable in reading the story. Almost everything made me shake my head and said, that was a really bad decision. That reflects poorly about this character. Why are they doing something so stupid? Or why are they not anticipating, at least contemplating this? I'm not digging where this is going right now. And maybe there's a slim chance, like once we understand what Tharos, his goal is and how he has this ability, maybe it'll make some of it better. I doubt it, but it's losing me fast.
Yeah. I just don't know if we're, based on where we're going with the solicits, I don't think this is going to be wrapped up by issue 12. I think we're going to have some resolutions, but the entirety of everything we've learned from issue one till now, I don't think that's going to be resolved by issue 12 and then we're moving into a wholly new arc. I think there's going to be some sort of stalemate or something. And that doesn't excite me because that means stuff being so either things get resolved so ungodly quickly that it gives you whiplash, or it's going to get stalled out even longer in favor of something I give no fucks about, which this is not on Jeremy. This is on DC. Fuck you, DC. I am so sorry. Like, I don't mean to like lose us any potential team ups in the future with DC, but my God, the decision making over there to have what's essentially a 12 issue series have two interruptions by the 12th issue of events is bullshit, and it's throwing a wrench in too many things in terms of pacing and not just the books I'm reading. So, but. I've been in that rant before. I'm not going down there again. I'm just reiterating it now. Fuck these events. But anyways, yeah. No, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I don't know how you feel about all this event stuff, but it's I mean, like, forgetting the quality of the actual events, but I'm so done with two, dude. Two.
Yeah, I trust we're on the same page about this. I mean, I read the Absolute Power Zero issue. It's nothing to get. It's nothing at all to get pumped up about. It's just to begin with. But yes, there's too many damn events, and almost all of them, which is funny because we'll probably talk about this as the anniversary special that's coming up. We might probably talk about that next. That when people criticize the event that is referring to, it's like, well, you pointed out accurately, it's so much better than almost everything we're getting these days that qualify as events. Like Dark Crisis and things like that. It's like, oh my God, all this build up just to have all these tie-ins and all these and everything to drag it out and make it seem special when you're lucky if you get one out of every five or six of these things that land and that are anything that people remember at all, other than the fact that, yeah, that really sucked and not remembering it for that reason. And I think part of why I mentioned about why I'm on this is the tipping point for me with this book is you do look at the solicits, and yeah, there's nothing in the solicits at all that imply or indicate that the main plot here is being wrapped up anytime soon. So that means that the can's just going to continue to get kicked down the road, and I'm not ultimately at the moment overly thrilled with the story that we're getting. There's aspects of it that work, but I'm still kind of puzzled by the whole Razor thing. Maybe Razor is going to play this big role by the end of the story, but it kind of seems like Jeremy Adams just wanted to stick Razor in, and that's why he's here. but that's such a Mickey Mouse point. But I look at this and it's like it makes me wish we could go back to that interview to me it was a curveball. I don't know how you felt when he mentioned him in general terms. About when Jeremy said that DC kind of gave him some leeway to be basically like essentially take the broom and sweep away some of the stuff from the Thorn run, at least some of it. Now, we don't know what he could have swept away. And you can just do this either off panel or with exposition dump. But he goes, no, I can't do that. So ever since that moment, I've been thinking about it, and based on the story that we're getting, it's like I'm really curious be curious to ask him what aspects of what was left in place at the end of the Thorn run, could he have just swept away? Because it'd be interesting if there's some things that he kept that like you and me and a lot of other people theoretically, potentially would have said, yeah, let's get rid of that and fix it right away. Because I mean, I'm sure it's not the case, but if we weren't handcuffed to the United Planets plot for the entire first 12, 15, 16 issues, if you could have gotten rid of that relatively quick, that would have been the way to go for me. Or at least, even if you had to include it in the plot, you can't just do it off panel. You have to make it part of your story, but not like this. I don't know that. So that's one of the things I keep thinking about when I read this. It's like, I wonder what stuff he could have just wiped away just like that. If he didn't, and maybe it would have been better if he did, because we're kind of meandering. That's how I feel. I think we're meandering here, and it's just not very satisfying.
And, you know, and look, I think, you know, writers, and I think the creative team, you know, you have to take some responsibility for that. But I also, and I'm not putting the entirety of the blame on it, but I think some of the blame belongs on DC because of these event things, because if if you didn't have to set up the whole thing at the end of the issue two or whatever for Fear Itself or whatever the hell it was. Was it Fear Itself? What do we
call it? Night Terrors.
Night Terrors. There you go. That's whether you set up a page or a couple pages or getting them in the plane in the first place and all this stuff. That's kicking the can down the road. Doing the stuff that requires Hal to be depowered back on Earth searching for this power battery. That involves setting up your story enough in advance to where at least it kind of makes a sense that he would be in that situation by the time the official issue rolls around. Because regardless of whether you agree with the event or not, or are intrigued by it at all, it makes much better sense for you to know what's coming and kind of steer your ship, willingly or unwillingly, steer it towards that point so it's not an immediate, abrupt change from one issue to the next and you're completely lost on what's happening. You're better off, whether you like it or not, steering into the skid. But you're still forcing him to steer that way, which is forcing him to kick the can down the road. And we're going to be 12 issues in when that happens. And you've already forced him to steer twice. Can you fucking stop? I'm so sick of it. These middling events that mean nothing. If you want these characters to be showing up in these events with their own little spinoff titles or whatever, then make them spinoff titles. Okay? Make it. You know, like, don't make it an official issue of the series or anything like that. Like, look, Night Terrors, okay, that's not everything I wanted it to be in terms of what I'm talking about right here in terms of doing its own issue. They were their own issues, but they were still you still took away the issues of the regular series that I would have gotten that month, those 2 months. So if you want these characters to be in there so bad and it has to be part of this event, then make it its own title outside of the main series that doesn't impact the main series unless the creator wants it so. And look, if you wanted, because we've interviewed so many creators and even Ron Mars and them have always said, like, look, you were hired to play in a sandbox. OK, you don't get the sandbox forever. You don't get to take the toys out of the sandbox. You got to leave them in there when you get out of it, so on and so forth. That's the analogy that he liked to use. OK, I completely get it. Every now and then you have to kowtow to the big wigs and appease them and do this summer event thing or whatever. But why does it have to be like a summer event, a fall event, a spring event? Fucking leave it alone. I'm so sick of it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything that the only thing I would slightly disagree with, and it has nothing to do with the events. We know there's too many events and almost all of them are not impactful and they're not great lately. That's the way it is. How far back do we have to go? We have to go back to Blackest Night to find an event that actually paid off, that was actually good. Infinite Crisis was the last quote unquote crisis event that actually paid off. That was good because Convergence wasn't really one of those entirely, and that wasn't good, even though despite the Hal stuff in it, it wasn't really good. And we know Dark Crisis was a piece of crap.
The first Metal was okay.
Yeah, that's I never read that. So I know a lot of people. I will give a very tacit thumbs up just because I know most people I respect seem to like that before they just overdosed us with everything else on it. True. That's true. It may not be a crisis event, but it was an event. So that's true. I did almost forget about all that Metal stuff, to be fair. The only thing and you're not giving an entire pass either, but I'm not going to give as much of a pass to what's going on in the main book and just say, well, it's been derailed, because the reality is the story Jeremy was telling didn't have to take 12 issues to or plot more in real design, even without interruptions, to resolve anyway. It could have been shorter. So there is responsibility on that too. I mean, even factoring in the two issues we lost with Night Terrors, which would really only make this issue, what, 9? And I don't know, we still could have, you certainly could have wrapped this story up in 10 issues if you were moving at a better pace. So some of that is creative choice. It is creative choice. And he has more leeway than probably Philip Kennedy Johnson did, only because of the book that this is the flagship book. You have more room, this book. That's why I'll be interested to see what the sales were for the April book because we only have sales still for the March book. By the time this comes out, the sales for the, we would have the sales books, probably the sale for the March, for the April books, but we don't have them yet. But this book has been hopping in and out of the top 50 two of the last 3 months. Back in like 71, 72, that's where the March issue was. So I'll be curious to see where the April issue lands. But this book is kind of trending downward too, not compared to like we mentioned before in the other, in some of the other review episodes. Not as bad as you would expect the Alan Scott to be, and not as bad as the Philip Kennedy Johnson book has gone or ended up recently, sales wise. But this book is not going in the right direction either. So it makes sure it, I don't know, but Jeremy has some time, but this is not an overly compelling story. The United Planets, by the very nature of it, that's such a losing concept to begin with. And I'm sorry, Legion fans, but it's a losing concept to begin with. Even if you knew nothing about Legion, we know what the United Nations are like. So just imagine that in space. So you know what a mess of bureaucratic bullshit it would be. Which is why Hal's naivete when it comes to dealing with this still gets irritating. Even though Razor gives him the pass because of how that fragile coalition being held together that, yeah, it could splinter. Woo!
You know what? Speaking of dealing with bureaucracy and stuff like that, it kind of irritates me that we haven't heard word one from Salak in this.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like there just to say, hey, we know who he is.
Yeah. Salak was the bookkeeper of the Guardians. The amount of bureaucratic meetings he had to sit in on with the Guardians and stuff like that, or he's been there for all of it, and he's a more senior Lantern than, is he more senior than Hal? I forget when Salak joined.
Yeah,
I know his first appearance is later than Hal, but just because duh. But right. Like,
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. You know, retroactively when they placed him in the Corps without looking. But yes, but we know he's been there forever. And yet you could also make a case because of that, he would have been one of the people who should have been talking to the council.
Yeah. He also should be one of the people. It shouldn't be Joe trying to call him Hal.
Trust me.
It should be Salak being like, hey dude, I've been there a time or two. You trust me. You know me. I've been like, I know you and I aren't always on the same side right now. We are. Can you fucking listen to me for 2 seconds?
Yeah, I didn't draw attention to that really ridiculous panel of Joe like leading the Lantern and walking off because there's so much else in this issue that I don't like that was such a, but it just reinforces Joe's taking the lead. Why? Because they want Joe to take the lead, not because she should, based on her experience or her clout or her animal magnetism and charisma. No, it's because the editorial wants Joe to be something special. But yeah, you're right. And that's one of the reasons I don't like what they're doing with Kyle. It's like, yeah, Kyle's like kind of like a variation of Hal being crumpled up into a ball holding his knees at the end of Parallax View when he's in that fantasy world dreaming what he's dreaming. That's kind of like how Kyle is being, but that's slightly more in touch with the real world. I don't know. There's nothing in this book. There's nothing in this issue that I liked. And I think it's a bad sign because usually there's almost always something that at least can say, OK, that was kind of cool. Like last issue with Hal taking charge and showing that, hey, maybe it wasn't so bad to take charge because Hal's ring didn't have the same limitations. But Hal wasn't afraid of taking the chance anyway, as opposed to just letting Kelly continue to get tortured and worked on.
Yeah, I still like the issue. And I know you didn't. I think. It sounds like, though, we have the same issues with the issues, just the severity to which we're reacting to those issues.
I respect this, but this is your tendency. You're giving them a lot. You're cutting them a lot more slack. And you say, well, deep down, you may not necessarily view things that much differently than me, but you're giving them more time to prove to. OK, I'm concerned, but prove me wrong.
Yes. That's where I'm coming from, yeah.
And I am at the point where I've seen enough to be really concerned, and it's like, your opportunity to prove me wrong is fading fast, and you better take advantage of it. And I think this dam has too many leaks in it to think that it's going to get plugged and work really, really well right now. It doesn't mean it can't happen.
I think, too, I'm just sick of not enjoying Green Lantern. Like, I think this is the best shot we've had at having a really good main Green Lantern book in a long time, because we talked about the Thorn stuff. That was okay. You know, we've been there. We know that. I was so mad at Grant Morrison's bullshit. And even, you know, even if we more fondly look back on it now than we did at the time, we did have issues with Venditti stuff. And I'm honestly just sick of not liking the main Green Lantern book for XYZ reason. And it's not like this particular book is leaps and bounds better than everything we've had before it since John's or whatever. But like even John's towards the end, like the Third Army stuff. I don't look back on Third Army stuff very fondly.
The first Lantern stuff ended better. That was a better way to go out. Even bad Geoff Johns has still been better than maybe.
I don't look back on the first Lantern stuff very well either. But this started off pretty strong. It had art I also liked and didn't have to get adjusted to. I thought it was pretty well done, and it had more pages or however you want to split it up that I liked than I didn't. So like I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna try and ride. I'm not gonna be naive, but I'm gonna try and ride the I'm enjoying a Lantern book as long as I can before I say I'm done. And I start giving it its significant lumps that I gave prior series before it. I'm just like, maybe I'm giving it too much of a chance. I don't know. We'll see when we get there. But I don't think I've ever been one to, in terms of historically speaking, going back and listening to past episodes of this show, I don't think I've ever been one to not call something out when I finally hit my breaking point. If I hit a breaking point, you'll know. But for now, I'm just I really want this to succeed.
Well, I do, too. And that's what my concern is, again. And I do want to talk about that, the anniversary issue. So I want us to segue soon out of this.
No, I'm done for the.
I don't mean in a bad way. I just know. But there's enough meat on these bones that we could really pick it for a long time. If we kept like vultures kept circling around it, that. I would like this to succeed too, and I guess it's more frustrating because I do think that Jeremy gets Hal to a large extent, maybe better than some of the other writers have in the post-Johns era. But I guess that's kind of what frustrates me too, is because despite that, then you have him being written the way he's written, being golly gee Fonz when thinking with the United Planets, and there's a difference between being fearless and being somewhat reckless and just being a complete idiot. And yeah. The flashback, I think it still reflects more poorly on Carol than Hal. Not that it reflects well on either of them, but it says more about Carol deep down. If you're lifting the veil more about Carol than Hal, because we could see Hal doing something like that. Carol like going along literally for the ride, that says more about where he's going with their relationship. Hitching your wagon to a Durlin, we know, is a losing proposition. The Venditti thing should have taught people that to begin with. United Planets is a losing concept. And just having the Lanterns just continually be everybody's bitch, it's old. It's old now. And I think that's part of the issue for me, too. I think it's just.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Chad. Tell everybody about the most exciting Green Lantern solicit we're probably going to have for the entire year.
I got to pull it up, actually, because I want to get the creative teams and everything right. Where's probably the best to get it? Twitter, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Well, Myron did the solicits already, too.
Oh, that's right, Myron. Blog of Oa, people. Blogofoa.com. We use it, too.
Well, in the meantime... Well, we're talking about the 30th anniversary revisitation, if you will, a one shot of Zero Hour. And it's a follow up to Zero Hour.
Yep. Written by Dan Jurgens and Ron Mars. Art by Dan Jurgens, Daryl Banks, Jerry Ordway, Paul Pelletier, Kelly Jones, and more. $10, 80 pages on sale. Is that August? Yes. August 28th, 2024. 30 years ago, one of the DCU's brightest heroes fell from grace, driven over the edge by his failure to save Coast City and millions of people. In the famed Emerald Twilight storyline, Hal Jordan became Parallax in the wake of Coast City being annihilated. After that, he almost succeeded in refashioning the entire timeline and resetting reality to restore his home in the Zero Hour event. Luckily, the heroes prevailed and destroyed this villain and timeline for good, or so we thought. Green Lantern Kyle Rayner is about to discover Hal and his vision have survived, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to make sure their world prevails. writers Dan Jurgens and Ron Mars return to the world of Zero Hour with an art team comprised of all-star DC talent to celebrate this landmark anniversary. What repercussions will their story have today have for those of tomorrow? Find out in this oversized special packed with action and your favorites from the 90s. Lots of cool covers.
Yeah, there's a few that really, to be perfectly honest, I don't know if there's any that I hate, which is a rarity. Mm-hmm. With all these covers, but almost all of them are good. It looks like the Jurgens cover probably is the best because it's the most classic.
The John Bogdanove or whatever, that's the one where
all the howls.
All the howls around him, but he's really doing a great job of aping Gil Kane and Neil Adams' faces there. Really good job.
Yeah, I do like that one. The Kyle cover doesn't do that much for me. I do like the Alan Kwa cover. That one's kind of cool too.
Yeah, that looks like it should be either a poster or like a trading card or something.
So this is really exciting. At least I think you're excited too. But it's in my wheelhouse clearly. But I've said for years that it's one of those things that even just as an Elseworlds story, the idea of revisiting. Long before we got this omniverse where it would make perfect sense that there would be a universe, and we're going to talk about that in a second. There would be a universe in which Hal's was successful in Zero Hour. But just the idea of just revisiting even Hour as an Elseworlds, what if Hal had succeeded in Zero Hour? I think what's interesting about this is that what's more interesting is what's not in this solicit. They make the point of saying Hal's vision have survived, but their world prevails. So it doesn't imply that there's a universe, but it implies that there's a world that Hal was able to create, which I find interesting. Just like I also find it interesting that Kyle is going to be the main character here, as opposed to it being Hal or Hal and Kyle. That is going to be Kyle who somehow stumbles upon this. Now, we don't know what the framing device is, so it may make perfect sense. But I find that interesting. I don't have a problem with it. I just find it interesting.
Well, I think the Jurgens cover is what reveals some of his world, because we have Supergirl in her black. Donna Troy's wearing blue. Is it Lex as some sort of Metallo type of figure?
I'm trying to go back to it now.
We have some of the Legion stuff going on because
Batgirl makes sense because Batgirl was. If you have to go back to Zero Hour, the key to some of this probably is you go back to Zero Hour and you have to look at some of the heroes from the different worlds that were aligned and decided to throw in their lot with Parallax to try to get their world back, which also creates an opportunity for, depending how this played out, like I mentioned to you that the hypertime concept of maybe the fork in the road. That happened in this version of time was instead of Hal recreating the entire universe all at once, which he did, which he was trying to do, which is probably why he ran out of power and was depowered and able to be defeated, as opposed to creating world by world by world. That if he said, hey, screw you guys, I've done all the work, I've done all the heavy lifting, my Earth gets created first, and then he gets attacked by all the heroes, he could have made a calculated decision or looked into the future to realize he's still going to lose. And at the last possible minute, with his time traveling abilities and his ability to pause time, just take his planet, himself, and all his allies and pop them out of that universe, take them to another universe, kind of like how we have our two John Stewarts now, because one was pulled out of hypertime. That the reality is, it would make sense if some of Hal's allies survived too, which would also theoretically create a natural resistance, potentially, because some of these people allied themselves with Hal just so he could. They could have their own worlds, and if Hal had to bail and didn't get to recreate an entire universe, maybe only one world, they could be basically pissed at that because he didn't keep his word to them. But this is inherently interesting. I just hope there's some resolution in it that is cool and leaves something. And they hint at this in the solicit. They hint at it in the solicit, leaving the door open for more stories regarding this. And I swear to God. Are they the first time we see Hal, if he's got those jagged teeth and the fear bug, I'm just going to put a bullet in my head. Minimize any fear bug bullshit in this story. Doesn't mean it can't be there at all. Minimize it. How about Hal masters whatever the hell's inside of him, whether he realizes it or not? How about Hal Hal is able to subdue Parallax. Even if he wasn't aware that there was something in him, he just was able to completely resist the and curtail, rein in the impulses because of how powerful he was. Do something different. We don't need another Convergence Parallax wasted. And that's all I have to say. But the story, I'm very, very pumped for the story, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Whereas the Solicit for the War Journal number 12, are you on Bloggerville?
Yes, I am.
I actually might pick up a variant cover for a War Journal for the first time because I really do like that.
Superpowers?
The Mark Spears variant.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The more photorealistic John. I think that's really cool looking.
They're both cool. I will admit the covers are really cool. The solicits, not so much. But
oh no, yeah. It has all led to this as John Stewart and his allies fight to beat back an invasion by Ulgrin and the Old Gods. Okay, so issue 12. He's still in this other place.
Which we knew about. We did talk about that last issue. Yeah.
John Henry and Natasha Irons and the sentient construct known as Ellie Stewart fight to save Shirley Stewart from the vengeance of the Star Shroud, and the survival of Metropolis hangs in the balance. Can John Stewart make it back to Earth in time to save his mother? So he's going to get there at the last second, not even be there to help protect his mother until the last few moments. So why is he in this other space? Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. In this final climactic issue. Climactic may be overused. It's final. And don't get me wrong, the solicits for the Green Lantern book are not nearly as bad as this, but just generally speaking, this is the problem with solicits. You read ahead and it's like, okay. So that's why I'm gonna be real curious to see how many people stick on War Journal to the end because of stuff like this. But
there's a part of this solicit for Green Lantern 14 that says, meanwhile, Carol sets out on a mission to help others, learning what it means to be a hero along the way. I really hope that means she just fucking stops giving Hal such a shitty time about always going off into space and doing his duty. Like, because part of the reason I was kind of upset at Carol at the beginning of the series was like, Carol, you've been there. You've had a ring. You know what goes on out there. How can you be so upset at him all the time for leaving? Like, don't get me wrong. Relationship speaking, like, it kind of sucks when your partner is just constantly gone and so on and so forth. But you can't make you can't make the thing that makes them who they are the problem. Like, you've been it's one thing to be like, oh, my husband is a or my significant other is a cop or a doctor or, you know, any number of different things that would require you to be have a less than set schedule or be away from the house for a long period. You're a truck driver, you know, something like that. But you go into the relationship knowing that, and you do your best you can to empathize with your partner. I haven't been in a relationship in forever, but I would assume that's what a healthy relationship is supposed to do. But you have to have an even greater empathy and understanding of your partner and their life if you've been there doing what they've been doing. And Carol has, to some extent, been doing that, whether it was out in space with Kyle and him doing his White Lantern thing, her during Blackest Night and Brightest Day. Like, you've been out there. You understand what he's doing more so. You should have more empathy for him instead of constantly getting on his ass. So I hope that this little sentence here means she's gaining some perspective.
Plus, and this that was part of the thing that bothered me about this issue too, going back briefly, is the fact that they're trying to correlate this coming and going aspect, that this is a pattern in between the two of them, that Hal does something or gets called away to do something and then he leaves Carol behind. But you can't compare going off and doing Green Lantern work with being an asshole, stealing a car and driving to Vegas and getting busted for it and being sent away. That's not he doesn't go to jail, but he's being where is he being sent to, like, a boarding school or some bullshit, something like that. That's not an apples to apples comparison. You're doing your duty. You're being responsible and protecting the universe in one, and the other, you're just being an idiot. So but yet there's some they would try. But that they were trying to set up, I understand they're trying to set up, well, this is the pattern between the two of them, that Hal's always gone. He always, you know, but I don't know. But yes, I agree with you. It would be nice if that's the case, but I also don't know. But Carol's also been a hero before, so why does she have to learn to be a hero? But maybe you're right. Maybe this is where he's going with this, to try to make it seem like, hey, you know, until you walked a mile in those shoes, the way you really have never really walked those miles, you know, that mile, because you've done this and you've done that on occasion, but you've also been, you know, more self-serving in a way, because it's always for the good of the Sapphires and for Zamaron itself, but you haven't been out patrolling space and doing all the things that I've done repeatedly for a long, I don't know. We'll see. I hope you're right. I just,
yeah. Super quick. Godzilla Kong New Empire is now on digital for people out there. Just FYI. I already have it. I watched it again. I liked it more the second time around. I didn't put a bunch of thought into why. Maybe I just, because I knew where it was going, I could appreciate what was actually on the screen in front of me at the time more. I still had some of the same issues I had with it when we were talking about it, but I did enjoy the watch through more the second time.
I still, sadly, have only seen it once. I might, if I have enough digital credits where I can actually, I would only buy it. And I'll just wait and get the Blu-ray, because it'll be more satisfying to get the
Blu-ray. It won't be out till next month. I know. This time.
Next month?
Yeah, so, next month. I'm pretty confident about that.
You were correct. Now they've changed. They did change it. So that must have been a placeholder. Yes, that must have been a placeholder. Yes. So I will. I am glad that you enjoyed it more. I liked, there's something about that movie that I do really like.
I still rank it where I ranked it as last of among those movies, but I think it was still pretty good. The freaking, is it the, what is this version of it? It looks pretty cool. A 4K, the 4K release Walmart exclusive steelbook looks pretty cool. Has some cool cover art. But anyways.
As that movie is about to roll into the number one spot worldwide in the franchise, I think that's unavoidable now. I might actually do it once we get the international numbers in this week. That may put it over the top, and it may officially pass Skull Island. Still won't. I still think it's going to come up a couple of million dollars short in catching Godzilla 2014 domestically for number one. I think it's only like around, it's at 190. After this weekend, it's going to be like 194, 195. It has to get to 200. I don't think it's got enough in it, because it just doesn't have enough screens left. So it'll be one of those things where it'll kick itself in the ass. It's like, if it just held, if it didn't drop 61% in weekend two, if it had just only, even if it dropped like 56%, 57%, I think the difference in the numbers would have been enough. If you extrapolated out through the life of its domestic run, that would have given you like the extra $2 or $3 million. You're probably going to come up short, because I think this will probably settle in somewhere like around maybe like 198, but you're at the point where you're just not bringing in much.
Yeah.
You know, daily. There's not, and it's not because people aren't watching it or there's no interest. This movie is held really well. It's just that it's hemorrhaging screens, and you knew it was going to once Planet of the Apes opened. Which, if we had more time, I was going to do my What Has Mark Seen, but we can do that next time. But yeah, so if you haven't seen Godzilla X Kong, yeah. At least rent it. It's a fun movie. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, for sure. Turn off your brain, though.
I don't think you have to turn your brain off any more than the others. None of them are.
Come on, man. The kaiju fight in zero gravity at one point. There's a little.
It's zero gravity. So come on. I don't know. I don't think that's the issue. The thing people zeroed in on more would not be that, probably. But you're correct. But that's at least Mothra survived. So not just survived, but Mothra was able to navigate that zero gravity fine. That was in her wheelhouse.
All right. If people want to reach out to us and tell us their thoughts on the current series, what do they do?
Lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GeoCast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, whatever platform you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail or text, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think. And let's not forget Lantern Cast Vids. Chad did a recent trading card unboxing. I do have a lot of those cards too, by the way, from that set. Not as many as you. I didn't buy a box, but I do have some.
I'm still missing 30 cards, so.
That's the problem. Sometimes you get these box sets and it's like, hey, I'm going to get almost everything. It's like, nope. In a way, it's less annoying, I suppose, than coming up two cards short. That would be me in a way that's more painful. Getting nipped like that, it's sometimes it's better to be blown out than being nipped at the wire. There's also going to be some more ring cyclopedia entries coming up shortly too. And I think that's it.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.